Dit is Taylor's Era.
Annelotte Prins en ik, Sophie Rutte-Frans, vertellen je in deze podcast wekelijks alles wat je moet weten over de allergrootste popster van dit moment, Taylor Swift.
We bereiden je voor op de Eras Tour, bellen met Swifties voor live concertverslagen,
doorgronden de roddels en geruchten en proberen het fenomeen Taylor Swift beter te begrijpen. Maar we brengen natuurlijk vooral een ode aan onze favoriete popster.
Are you ready for it?
Luister nu naar Taylor's Era op Spotify en Podimo.
See you there. Ik ken niemand die slaap zo serieus neemt als jij, Nidia.
Ik ben er extreem goed in.
En je hebt alle spulletjes. Het ultieme Emma-matras, zo'n heel goed slaapmasker, oordopjes, slaapspray.
I know, honey. Maar wat nog miste, was het perfecte kussen.
En die had ik. Van Emma.
Ja, ik kon natuurlijk niet achterblijven. En dus ben ik tegenwoordig de trotse bezitter van een Diamond Pillow.
En zij slaapt nu de diamonds van de hemel.
Wil jij ook het perfecte kussen? Tijdens de Ik Wil Hem weken op emma-sleep.nl krijg je bergen korting. En met code DAMNHONEY, aan elkaar geschreven, krijg je daarbovenop nog eens 10% extra korting.
Welcome everyone. Welcome to this special evening with Pauline Harmange, the author of I Hate Men. It's my pleasure to welcome you all. My name is Tessa. I'm an event curator at Tivoli Vredenburg, and I'm hosting this event together with Atlas Contact, the publisher of Pauline's book. Before I go on to further introduce Pauline and her wonderful interviewers, a few practical questions of notes. First of all, if you want to just chat, leave a comment, or have any technical issues, please leave them in the chat, and I will make sure to help you to the best of my abilities. If you have any questions or remarks, but we actually do prefer questions for Pauline or the wonderful women of DAMNHONEY, please put them in the Q&A. And the wonderful thing about this Q&A is that you can upvote the questions with a thumbs up. So if you are like, wow, that's exactly the question I want an answer to, please give it a thumbs up. And the more thumbs, the more likely the chance that we'll actually ask your question. And then on with the show. First of all, as we were looking for interviewers of this evening, it was a very easy find because these ladies themselves debuted with a manifest, with a book called DAMNHONEY, but it didn't stay at just a book. They have a very successful podcast discussing all the shit women have to deal with these days. I think they're up until the 58th episode, but I'll leave it to the ladies to correct me on that. Please welcome Marilotte Hagen and Nidia van Voorthuizen.
Hello.
Great. Well, they have set up this wonderful setting much better than my boring bookshelf. So welcome, ladies.
Thank you. Thanks.
Well, they will be interviewing Pauline Harmange. Pauline Harmange was a writer, a blogger, and a volunteer at an organization who helps women who were victims of sexual violence. She was publishing her first book, and then it went viral. I Hate Men has been already translated into 18 different languages. I have the Dutch copy right here. The Dutch copy is out since last Thursday, so please get your hands on one of those books. But first, let's have a good chat with Pauline Harmange. Welcome from France.
Hey.
Well, I'll leave the floor up to Pauline and Marilotte and Nidia. And have fun, guys. And please don't forget to ask your questions in the Q&A.
Thank you, Tessa. Hi, Pauline, and welcome. And thanks for tuning in all the way from France. We're very excited to have you, and we're looking forward to this conversation. We have like a trillion questions, so we're going to dive in immediately. And let's start with you. There was this huge media storm. You went viral. Everything went crazy. How are you? Moi.
I'm very, very glad to be here tonight. It's so
Yeah, 6 months ago, I would never have dreamed that something so incredible would happen to me. So I'm very, very fine, but I'm also very, very tired.
Oh, yes.
I can imagine.
I can imagine, yeah. And doing interviews in another language is always hard. So yeah. We completely understand. So when your book came out, there was this email from an employee of the France Ministry for Gender Equality. His name, yeah. Ralph Zurmeli. And he emailed to let your publisher know that they, or he asked your publisher to withdraw the book from the catalog. What was your reaction when you heard about this email?
To be completely honest, I thought it was a prank that a random guy was pulling on me. I didn't really realize what it could mean for my publishers until they said, well, this could be very serious.
Oh, yeah.
This could go to trial and could be very difficult to deal with that. But at first I was on holiday and I was having such a great time and my book was coming out. And 2 days later, there was talks of pulling it off the shelves and never seeing it reach its full potential. But also I was so frustrated.
Understandably,
with the idea of a man trying to take advantage of his position to intimidate a very, very small publishing house into giving up on months of work.
Mm-hmm, yeah. But he didn't get what he wanted. Because now
got to the opposite.
You're famous and you're going viral. So that's really nice. Thank you. What was his name again? Zurmeli? We don't have to.
He's not worth
no,
it.
No more attention to this guy.
There is a word for the... your book is called Men, I Hate Them. And there's a word for hating men, and it's misandry. What would you say your definition of misandry is?
When I was writing this book, I was really thinking of a way to make understand that we have to think about men as a group, as a social group. It's something that materialist feminists have been doing for a long time. And I wanted to say that misandry is about criticizing men in general and how the privileges they have and they use can very affect women in their daily lives, and that it's not that it's important to think about this idea of being a social group, even if you don't want to. I think it's something that a lot of men don't want to deal with. That's mm-hmm. They're one of the good guys, but they also are men and benefit from a lot of privileges.
So the feeling is that it's like a frustration that they don't deal with the fact that they are part of a social group who has privileges.
Right? Yeah. What I say is that some women really hate men in a very visceral way because they've been hurt and they don't want to deal with them. But for me, misandry is not just that. It's more of a spectrum of negative feelings that can go just from, oh my God, I can't deal with men in my daily life because they're so boring, to the idea of really not wanting to deal with them physically because of all the things they've done to you. So it's more of a spectrum.
Yeah, and how would you say it's different from misogyny, which is a word for hating women?
It's very tempting to make a direct parallel between those two terms, but misogyny is just. I see it like an ambiance that we all live in because of a society that is patriarchal and because of daily sexism. And it's different from misandry because hating men is just a reaction of everything that we, all the shit we have to deal with every day. And if men treated us like human beings all the time, we wouldn't have to develop these strong feelings against them whereas misogyny is just not liking women because they're women. It's very essentialist.
There's different.
And there's also this quote in your book that you say that we don't injure or kill men. We don't prevent them from getting a job or following whatever their passion is or dressing as they wish or walking down the street after dark or expressing themselves however they see fit. So misandry won't hurt men.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting to see that when we speak about not liking men or hating them at the most extreme, mm-hmm. they react by saying, "So you want to kill us, mm-hmm. every one of us?" But that's what misogyny.
Yeah.
And there's no evidence of ever having a misandrist crime ever. So it's just funny to see that it's difficult to envision not liking someone without wanting to hurt them.
One more question. I was wondering, what does hating men look like? Are you looking at them angrily all the time, or are you giving them the finger every day?
For me, yeah, it's really like it's a lifestyle where I try not to engage with them. When I can, and when I really have to, it's really other women will deal with that differently, but I'm not, it might seem strange, but I'm not very, I don't like confrontation and conflict. And so when I have to deal with men in my daily life, I just tend to want to interact the least possible and have my resting bitch face, which I love, and not trying to be agreeable to them when I don't want to. And I think it's something that it takes a lot of time to realize that you don't have to be agreeable to men, because most of the time they don't really care about who we are deeply, and so when we try to please them, we can't be ourselves.
Well, you write really serious about hating men, and one of the first things that struck me in your book is that you write that most feminists talk about misandry in this like sarcastic, funny, ironic way, and that they also deny misandry. And the thing is, we did exactly that in our book about feminism.
Guilty.
We wrote this chapter about misandry and we were like, of course we hate men. It comes with the job. But we ended the chapter with, no, there's no such thing as girls against boys. It's all about equality. Why do you think we as feminists, but also Marilotte and I, why do we talk about misandry in this specific, fun, sarcastic or denying way?
Well, when I was asked to write about misandry, the first thing that I thought about was that it began as an insult that men were throwing at feminists just because they were feminists. And I realized that the problem with being a feminist is just that whatever you're going to say is always going to sound too extreme for a lot of people. And we want to take it back and to reappropriate this idea of misandry by saying, of course, I drink male tears and men are trash, etc. And I wanted to just to say that it's okay to be even the tiniest bit serious about it. And of course, I find it very noble that a lot of feminists want to reassure men and to prove that they're not what anti-feminists want us to be, being angry and violent and these very negative stereotypes about feminists. But I also wanted to go a little bit further, because we're doing a great job when we're trying to include the a lot of people and to speak to even the less radical people. And I think when you write a book about feminism, you don't want to alienate out of even a lot of women, because a lot of people don't want to be seen as extreme. But it's important also to speak to this anger that we all have when we are feminists.
So we were afraid to, or maybe not afraid, but reluctant to say that we hate men, because we didn't want to be the men-hating feminists that people are always talking about. But you are the man-hating feminist.
Yeah.
So
thank you for that.
Let's dive into it. Why do you hate men?
Well, a lot of people think that I have one specific personal experience that is at the root of everything that I wrote in my book. And it's very funny because that's absolutely not the case. And my reasoning really comes from reading a lot about rape culture and about not just how men are violent and are rapists and abusers, because not all men are like that, but also at how this violence is dealt with the rest of society and how everything is really tailored around men in general to give them a very easy life, and how they profit from that, and even when they say that they understand the feminist struggle and that they want to be allies, they don't really do much. And that's really where my anger really started. Of course, as a feminist, I was very angry at rapists and abusers. But I began to realize that it's not enough just to say, yes, I understand it's very difficult to be a woman, but you have to do something about it as a man. And I realized that not a lot of men are really willing to do that. And that's when I...
What should they do then? What makes a good ally? What makes a good feminist man?
Maybe you're going to prove me wrong, but... in France, we have a lot, for example, we have a lot of feminist podcasts, and some of them speak about, for example, masculinity and how it's toxic. And the demographics just show that men don't want to listen to that, and that they don't read the feminist book that were written for them, and that they're just not going to go for, not going to educate themselves about what's is the problem, and the problem is masculinity in general. And so the first step, I think, for a man that truly wants to be an ally is to reach within himself and really look at himself and do something about his own masculinity.
Dismantle his own masculinity.
We promoted your book on Instagram. And well, we got a lot of positive reactions, but we also got a lot of shame on you. And you should never promote hate, it's dividing. And why did you, because we can relate to the feeling that like men are quite annoying or like frustrating, and why did you choose to use the word hate in the title?
The coming up with this title was a long, long quest with my editors. We wanted to go for something much, much softer, with misandry in the title. But we thought that it would not speak to everyone because it's such a niche term. And in the book, I say, well, me, I hate men. And it's just, it was like a cry of the heart saying, I have to be honest with you. I really don't want to, but the fact is that I hate men. And my editor thought it would be a good title, and I think she proved to be right. I didn't realize at the time that it would strike such a controversy, and that people would really equate détester to hate with this idea of violence, because I think that when you read the book, you notice that it's not, that I am not violent in my words. It's just the title that really strikes.
And can hate be a constructive force? Is there a power in hate?
I'm going to sound very smart when quoting Malcolm X, yes. That said that that something that you don't hate, you will not truly fight against. What I want to convey in my book is that when you recognize that you have this hatred, or and that it stems from anger at being ill-treated and of all this injustice, then you can use this anger and channel it to make something of it in something constructive. And it's not enough to just stay at hatred, but it's the starting point, and it's important to acknowledge that.
Yeah. Now, you write in your book about women being the victims of the patriarchy. Do you also think that women are complicit in the oppressive system of the patriarchy?
I think that it's very difficult to find your place when you're a woman, and you have basically just a very small set of options, whether you're going to actively fight against patriarchy or you're going to do your best to fit in.
Mm-hmm. It's easier to fit in, I guess.
Yeah, of course, it's easier. And it's also, you're going to be less exhausted, I think.
Yeah.
But it's just, I think it's a coping mechanism. So, of course, some women will have behaviors that will directly go against their own interests and against the interests of other women. But it's something that we have all done at some point.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You
write in your
book
that you didn't want to be like the other girls when you were younger. Well, same for me. I totally recognize myself in those paragraphs. But shouldn't we hate all those bitches too then? Right? why hate men? Why don't hate the patriarchy or hate the toxic masculinity,
the system
we're fighting?
Yeah, I say hate all of that.
Yeah, okay. There's enough hate for every topic.
Yeah, we have plenty of
we have plenty of hate.
Okay. I will never ever put my negative energy towards women. Obviously, I want to try and allure them to the dark side of feminism at some point. So, and staying open. And I wanted to focus on men and not just on patriarchy. Is an abstract concept, and we have to fight against it in its many, many ways, like a hydra. Men—they are the limbs and the heads of patriarchy, and they—they are the one who votes the law, govern the people, and we need to see that it's the patriarchy is just not just an empty word, and that people embody it and take advantage of it.
Yeah,
very clear. Talking about men, we always encourage the men we know to call themselves feminists. I think we would say that we know, in fact, a few men that we think are feminists, that call themselves feminists, but you don't seem to agree, right?
Yeah, I'd say that if a feminist woman I know says to me, well, my boyfriend or my cousin is a man and is a feminist, I'm willing to believe her. But what I really have trouble with are the men that say that they're feminists, and that they do that kind of in a performative way to take a role, and because in certain social circles, it's trendy to be feminist, and it's an easy way to make women trust you. And we see a lot of that in activist circles, and it always ends up by a woman who will say, "Well, this guy says he's a feminist, but I know him, and I know for a fact that he's a rapist." So. Yeah. I don't want to trust men when they want to perform being a feminist. And there's a lot of work to do for a man in himself and with all the women in his life before he can call himself that, I think.
Okay, and so there is a way to call yourself a feminist as a man, but you have to work for it. You have to read, you have to educate yourself, listen to women.
And what kind of advice would you give a man who wants to be an ally?
Read the books, listen to the podcast.
Listen to them, honey. Hello.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And listen to the women in your lives, because I've seen so many men that say that they understand feminism and that they're. But when a woman says, "Well, I've been abused by your friend," suddenly nobody is there. And it's really the worst thing that that men can do. It's not trusting women when they speak up.
Yeah, and there's this fun situation that men reacted to our post about your book, while they didn't react to all the awful shit we posted that is done to women. Like 2 days ago, we had this we had this big post about this disgusting vlogger who exposes girls, and almost no reaction to that post. Mm-hmm, so it shows how people think about hating men. What about allyship? There's this quote in your book: "From now on, I've decided that my priority is to commit to being a genuine ally to the women I know." How do you shape your allyship? It's a beautiful quote.
I think that we've all been in some ways brought up to see other women as competition. Mm-hmm. And when you can free yourself from that, you can have very intense relationships with, for example, with my sister, with my close friends, but also with women I don't know anything about when they speak up online. And it's important for me to be kind of a harbor that women around me know that they can talk to me, because it's very rare, I think, even now, to know that you will never be judged for something that you've been through as a woman. And for me, this idea of sisterhood is also very political, because it's not just being friends with all women that makes no sense, but it's wanting a better life for all women. Mm. And also that means listening to other voices and being very aware of my place as a white woman in a privileged society.
And is there a place in your sisterhood for like a non-binary people or queer people, trans men?
I realized a bit late that my book was written in a very binary way, because I'm a cis woman, and I didn't know anything.
We got a sound for that. Shame. No, I'm kidding.
Some of that. I know. I wrote my book from a place of what I know. But of course, my sisterhood, in France, I don't know if there is a translation, but we say my Adelphi. The fact of being in a state of fraternity, but with people from all expressions of gender, it's very important for me to learn more about that and to be more aware of that, because that's something that lacks a lot.
That's good to hear. Good to hear.
Although your the title of your book has the word hate in it, it concludes with a message of love, of sisterhood. And you write that we need sisterhood in order to be truly free. What do you mean by this?
Well, if we've been brought up to only see ourselves with the eyes of men and of this patriarchal society, I think we need the eyes of fellow women and people that are not straight white men to really see ourselves the way we are, because I think there's something very that's just a very, very small box for women to fit in a patriarchal society. And when you get close to other women and other non-white men, you can see that there is a lot more way to just be a human being. And it's not easy to achieve that all by yourself. So we need to bond. And also for fighting is a lot easier when we're a lot to fight.
Together, yeah. Okay, one last question before we have to round it up. What do you hope your book will achieve?
I really wanted my words let women know that this anger that they feel is legitimate, and that it's not the end of the road as a woman to be angry at men, that there is something beyond, and that it can be beautiful. And I think that what I really wanted was that my book would be passed on from one woman to another, just to say, okay, so I think you're going to see yourself in it. And I think I have achieved that.
Saw ourselves in your book.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much. Then I'm going to give the digital mic back to Tessa for a small announcement.
There she is.
Hi. Thank you so much for this lovely interview. Hold on, because we're not finished yet, but we'll give Pauline, Lydia and Marilotte a quick break. But then we have for you Babette Fonchi. Babette, are you there? Yeah, there she is. Babette is a poet and a lawyer. Maybe, Babette, you can tell us a bit more about it on a later stage. But for now, let's focus on the poetry. You have been published in Elle magazine, in De Groene Amsterdammer, and in one of my favorite online feminist magazines, Lilith magazine. And your first poetry collection is coming out very soon, am I correct?
It is coming out very soon. It's a relative...
All right, but we will still wait for it, and we can follow you whenever in the meantime. But for now, you have a poem for us. The poem will be in Dutch, so sorry to everyone who doesn't understand Dutch, but to give them a quick heads up, please give me a bit of the context. Give us a bit of the context.
Yes, thank you. I'm going to read my poem, and it's titled Als Nieuw in Dutch, in English, Like New. And I wrote this for Lilith Mag, the magazine you just mentioned. And I wrote this poem in January when I was thinking about how we normally have New Year's resolutions and how we want to often improve ourselves in those resolutions. And in this poem, I basically say that to a certain degree, it's okay to carry your demons and all of your stories that you have been going through in your life and to feel them, but that it's important to not let them take you over, and that you can take action at any moment if you want. And it can be individual action, but it can also be action towards the community or to better the world.
Well, that sounds just like what we need to hear. The floor is yours, Babette.
Thank you. Als nieuw. De millennial met intenties kocht een box vers geperste juices. Overpriced, want dan is het echt. voor de detox van een jaar waarin niet alles ging zoals gewild. Ontsnappen aan de harde hand van haar moeder met een yoga-retreat in Andalusië. Gecanceld. Maar niet erg, want bij nader inzien niet Instagram-waardig. Plaatst over het thuisblijven wel in filter. Ze nam zich voor het nagelbijten af te leren om zo het verwijderen van de tandpasta-tubefolie niet meer uit te hoeven besteden. Microdoseren voor een verbeterd probleemoplossend vermogen. Maar de code van de gesloten huizenmarkt blijft lastig te kraken. In mijn hoofd is het zomer. En daar blijft het zomer. Voornemens zijn onecht. Aan mijn bedoelingen heeft mijn ex minder dan aan de witte glinsterende parels die ik haar gaf. Ze weet nu beter dan wachten op meisjes die niet weten wat ze willen. Net als ik ook niet meer wacht op postbezorgers met vooraf aangekondigde disclaimers. Vaders die even boodschappen gingen doen. Maar niet terugkwamen. Een nieuw jaar om van therapie een werkwoord te maken en tweedehands trauma's niet door te geven. Ze om te zetten in zwarte vierkantjes of zelfs de straat op gaan. Vandaag ben ik anders bang. Thank you.
Thank you, Babette. This is very important, I think, to keep in mind. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us. If we want to read more of your poetry, where should we follow you?
I have a website since a couple of weeks, babettefontje.nl. But I'm very active on Instagram. So if you wanna check me out and my funny jokes as well, then you can. It will sound pretty funny, but you can go to Bob Fonji.
Bob Fonji. Okay, great. Well, everybody, just follow this girl and be in for a lot more of your beautiful work and your beautiful words.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, on with Pauline and them honey. Luckily, there are a lot of questions already. So I would say, Marilot and Nidia, take it away.
Yes.
And
Their
participants, just keep them coming, those questions.
Yes.
We are keeping track of all of them.
Yeah, we have a Google document here with all the questions. First one, let's start off. How do you look at the ways in which patriarchy also puts men at a disadvantage? Should we give this issue any place in our debate as feminists?
I think we that's not a subject that has been left completely behind by feminists. Quite the contrary. I have spent a lot of time explaining how patriarchy hurts men in general. And we need to continue doing that. But we shouldn't do only that. And also we should question why when we, for example, speak about women being beaten by men, suddenly there is a lot of men saying, but women beat men too. Well, why aren't you interested in that in general? And why do you only bring it up when we we speak about women?
We had this like last week when we were on a television show to talk about sexual intimidation. Exactly this. Yeah. It's very recognizable.
It's a very, very important topic, but it's always weaponized by anti-feminists as if we don't speak about it. And we've been doing it for like 50 years.
Okay, let's see. There's another question. Are men also reading your book? And if so, what were their reactions?
Men have read my book. They are not the main target of the book. I think it's obvious.
But they are welcome, right?
Yeah.
More
yeah,
than welcome, learn. I guess. Yeah.
I'm very glad that some of them are willing to engage with this conversation. And it's very funny to see that a lot of times it's a woman they know that I've been passing on to them, saying you should read this. And they've taken it surprisingly well. When nice. They've read it, of course.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not just the title.
But the whole thing. After reading your interview in the Dutch newspaper Trouw this weekend, we are wondering how you deal with male interviewers in general and how do you look back up on the Dutch interview particularly?
It was not a very pleasant moment for me.
No. You could read it.
Yeah, you could read it through the lines. Yeah. But no.
I've not been interviewed by a lot of men, and I think it's a very frustrating when it's presented to me as, yes, we want a man to interview you because it's going to be so much more interesting for the readers if you have a male interviewer, because it's going to be a little bit more difficult. And I don't think that's true at all, because I've spoken with more conservative female journalists and they've been very challenging. And it was very interesting, but it was also polite and respectful of my time, which is not often the case with male journalists. And for this one, it was particularly difficult for me because I felt like whatever I was going to say was not what he wanted to hear. I really would have preferred, sorry, to speak with a female journalist.
Yeah. A lot of my female friends tell me that I'm
exaggerating
about the problem of patriarchy. I'm just gonna slide up, whatever. They just don't want to talk or think about their position in society and how men act towards them in a toxic way. How can I deal with this? How can I show them there is a real problem? Yeah. So the female friends are saying, no, that's not true. I never get catcalled or I never, anything. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's also a coping mechanism, because when you put on the feminist glasses, you can never take them off. And suddenly you're very angry about a lot of things. So, yeah.
It's like taking the red or the blue pill.
Yeah,
exactly. I personally think that it's very difficult to force change on someone that doesn't want to see something. And what I want to do personally is to reassure my non-feminist female friends that I'm always going to be there for them, and that it's I think it's the most important thing. It's not I don't want to separate myself from non-feminist women, because they are the victims too, and I try to engage with them in the gentlest way possible. And I think I'm a big reader. And I think that passing books about feminism that are more mainstream and more easy to read are a good starting point for conversation that can go more smoothly.
Yeah. Do you also hate the men in your family, if any?
What I always say is that I hate how they are men sometimes. I have brothers and I have a father and a grandfather, etc. I love them because they are nice to me and I know that they love me. But when they perform like very masculine men, I hate those behaviors and I call them out on them to encourage them to be better.
What's their response if they see that you're going viral with a "I hate men" book?
And it's very funny because they're both very proud of me because I'm succeeding, and also kind of wary, like, okay, so that's the subject you're going viral with. And the men in my family have read my book, and I think they're still processing it.
Okay.
And how do they, if you call them out for their men behavior? How do they react to that?
Well, now they take it much more seriously.
I have to.
Yeah.
Do you always call them out?
Yeah, but I have the privilege of having a very understanding family, and we have a lot of interesting conversations about all sorts of topics. And I know that it's not possible in every setting, in every configuration. And I also think that we should sometimes protect ourselves because it can be very harrowing and sometimes dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's see if there's another tongue breaker there for me waiting. You think you can only talk about white men when you talk about sexual intimidation, sexism, etc.? Because I think this is among all men, not only white men.
That's something that came from Trau. Mm-hmm. I really don't
Trau
know.
Trau really hunts you from now on.
I think there was a lot, something really lost in translation between me and the journalist. What I wanted to say is that it's not for me to speak about issues of race because I'm not well versed in it, and I'm also not the most pertinent woman to speak to that with. And a lot of Black and other feminists have written books and talked about it. So why should I have an opinion? It's not my place to say.
He was really trying to push you to say something like, oh, well, in France, it's okay, but in other countries, he was actually just, he was mentioning India.
And Islam.
And I really said to him that I will not throw other countries under the bus because we have different cultures and it's so racist to look at other countries just to say, well, we have it good here. First of all, we don't have it good here. And also, it's very white saviorism and I really hate it.
Yeah, and it's definitely a way to take the conversation away from the actual thing that you were talking about. Sorry, this question. Oh, no, it's coming later. First, another question.
This one, right? Yeah. Pauline Armange was compared by Saskia de Koster in an essay in NRC to Simone de Beauvoir, also an important French feminist. What do you think about this comparison?
Well, I don't know much about me being similar to Simone. We're on a first name basis. But what I would say is interesting is to say that is to realize that when Simone de Beauvoir was alive and kicking, she was seen as an extreme feminist and she was given a lot of hell about it. And that's what's happening to me right now. In France, Simone de Beauvoir is seen as such a great example of what feminism should look like. Mm. And so my take on that is that when you're a feminist, you're never the good feminist for your age.
When you're dead.
Yeah.
We have to wait a few years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Isn't it ironic or a paradox that the title of the book invites for a lot of talk about men also in this discussion?
Yeah, it's inevitable because I think we have to explain why it's important to let people realize that it's not a baseless feeling, but it was also important for me to write a lot about women in my book.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you're going to write a book on misandry, you're going to spend a lot of time discussing men afterwards.
And in the interview, we mainly focused on hating men, but later in the book, there's also lots of stuff about sisterhood and about heterosexuality. But if you haven't read the book, you don't know that yet. But okay, here's the question that I had to laugh about.
Okay, there we go. Are you ready for this? Which three men in the world do you hate the most?
The most.
The most.
Okay.
Most.
Okay. It's so funny. I have a very, very specific and very violent hatred towards the French Ministry of Internal Affairs. He's called Gérald Darmanin. I really, really, really hate him. I really hate Donald Trump. It's very difficult not to, I think. I really hate Roman Polanski. That's my top three.
That's a good top three. Good choices. Yeah. And all famous people. It could have been just like Baker guy from around the corner.
That you give the finger to every day.
But no. How do you feel towards queer men, especially femme queer men, also suffer under the patriarchy? Could they be our allies as men?
I think that there is an feminism really puts an emphasis on that. We have a lot of crossing paths with the queer community, mm-hmm. and as a queer person, of course, I embrace all of that. But
cheers, man.
Yeah. Being a gay man doesn't mean that automatically you will not be sexist sometimes. And I think it's not a free pass at all times.
But they could be allies?
Yeah. We have to be allies to each other. And I think that it's important for both of us to work in this.
Yeah, but also the queer gay men have the privileges that you talk about.
Yeah,
but the same for me as a heterosexual, having the privilege of being. Yeah. And so I won't completely understand, but I can listen, I can try, I can educate myself. Yeah.
Let's see. There has been a lot of talk about hate this evening, but to me, your book is really about freedom. Do you agree? And can you elaborate a bit on how hating men can free us from the male gaze?
Yeah. It was really important for me that the book did not end on such a negative note. My point really, the book could have been titled "An Ode to Misandry" before we settled on that title, because there is something very freeing in realizing that you really don't need men in your life to thrive as a woman and as a person. And I think that's the thing that is the biggest takeaway of the book, if I can be so bold, is that when you don't care at all about what men think of you, you can experience other ways of being a woman, of being a human being, of being in a relationship with other people. And it's very fun to realize that there's so much to be other than just a woman.
Yeah. There was this beautiful sentence. I can't really do a quote, but about being disgusting or being lazy, or you can just be all those things, be ugly, whatever you want. Yeah, yeah, it's really nice. Do you think your anger towards men, is fueled by jealousy? I feel like that is the biggest cause of my anger for men. Jealousy. Mm. Interesting.
For me personally, not at all, because what I think of men is that they have it the easy way a lot of times, and that they really don't have to do much to be seen as wonderful, great guys with a lot of success. And for me, the biggest problem of society is really these masculine core values of wanting to be the best and to step on others to reach the top. And that's not something that I want for society in general. And for myself, I really want to strip society of all these values that are so oppressive to people. I don't think we can build sane relationships with others and build a good society with if we want to be to have what men have. And that's why I don't really see feminism as wanting to be the equals to men, because men really are not a positive addition to society. We need to rethink all of that, I think. But I understand that it seems easier to have what men have than to rethink.
It must be nice to just go out in the street at
night and not worry about everything.
Yeah.
Have you had the opportunity / time to talk to your translators about the translation process? Did you have a list of important aspects of your book that you wanted them to pay special attention to?
Unfortunately, I don't read the 18 languages that my book is going to be translated in. And I can't wait to read the Dutch translation, because I've been trying to learn Dutch for a long time and not having a lot of success with it.
So we could have done this in Dutch?
Oh my God. We'll speak to you in about a year.
Yeah. You can read our book then. That's nice.
Yeah, you can read our pamphlets.
Oh my God.
But I can obviously speak English, and I had the opportunity to read the English translation and to add my notes, but I realized that I'm not a translator and that I don't have the grasp of very subtle language things. And so I'm very trustful of the translators, and they're doing an amazing job.
Shout out to the translators.
Yeah.
Did you ever got mansplained about this topic?
A lot of men want me to realize that I'm going against my own interests, and that I should really just open my arms to all men in feminism. Mm. And that's just before they call me an ugly bitch. So, they really do try, but not that much.
and there was this paragraph in your book which said, we need men. Well, first of all, we don't need men. And second, where were they all the time? You know, it's weird to say that since this book came out, no man is interested in feminism. You know, we run the platform and we make a podcast. And I think like maybe 5% is cis men, I think around maybe less. So, and it's not because of your post on Instagram of your book that there are no men. So,
Will hating men actually destroy the patriarchy in the end, or will it only make it worse since men always try to do everything against us?
Well, since they try to do everything against us, we should just stop trying to get their attention, because obviously it's not working. What I think is not that misandry is a tool to fight against patriarchy. I think it's just a reaction that we have, and we have to acknowledge that if we have it in us. But it should just empower us to make the most of ourselves, of our time, of our energy, to fight patriarchy in the most efficient way, which is not to try to reach out to men because they're useless.
What advice do you give to women if they are confronted with a man that makes a sexist comment or tries to attack you on your feminism? How do you react? Should you react? I sometimes find it exhausting trying to explain feminism to men. I think we all know those men, right? You say you're a feminist and suddenly there's this weird question, or you have to defend yourself on a weird topic.
It's very exhausting. And I think that we have to realize that if we are not up for the debate at the moment where it reaches this, they will have another time, and this man will speak to other women, and maybe one day he will Google for himself, and that would be amazing. I think it's important not to feel guilty when we don't have the energy to have this conversation, because it can be very difficult also to make the difference between men that are genuinely interested and willing to learn and men that just don't want the debate for the fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
And these men, we should never, ever indulge them.
No, don't waste your energy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's see. How would you raise boys?
I think there is a lot of the question of education is very important. I have a lot of opinions about it, but I have no children, so time will see. But it's very important to me as a feminist that all the weight of bringing up boys is not put on the mother, because the socialization is just not the fact of parents and not just the burden of mothers. And also, I believe that now we are in a moment that where we can raise our children more in a more in a genderless way, freeing them from the gender stereotypes, and allowing boys to feel emotions and to be vulnerable, and also teaching them to listen to girls and to women. And I think we could see a lot of progress going this way.
Then the last question, how do we start a new feminist political revolution? Oh, we got a small error.
Oh no. The connection is unstable.
Yeah,
but now you're back.
Yeah, you're back.
Okay. feminist revolution. Some people think that we are already in the fourth wave of feminism, and I think we are at a tipping point where we could easily give up because we are all very tired of everything that's going on. But I think that when we really want to cultivate this idea of political sisterhood, we will make ourselves heard, and we will reach a lot more success. So we really have to be careful of how we are going to go in the upcoming years, because there's a lot of backlash and there's a lot of violence against feminists and against women right now. So the revolution is very near, I think, if we don't give up now. And it's going to come because there's no other way. I mean, every time there's a new wave of feminism, it's more... it's bigger than the last, and now it's global, and here we are from different countries exchanging our views, and it's going to be great.
That's great.
I hope.
as the big finale, another question but a compliment. To reassure Pauline, I thought your answers to the questions in Trouw were very good. You made your point and I thought it was very impressive. This was actually my first encounter with you and your book, and I'd really like to read it now. And this is from Linda.
Yay!
Thank you, Linda.
Nice words from Linda. Well, that's it. Thank you so much, Pauline.
Yeah. Thank you.
And thanks for all the people listening and looking at us, I think.
Yeah.
Thank you for tuning in. And don't forget to buy Pauline's book. And we'll take this chance to promote a bookstore in Utrecht, a feminist one, Savannah Bay. Buy your book there or order your book there, because bookstore need our help.
Yeah.
Yeah. And thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. So
for
nice
us
to meet you.
Thank you.
See you.
Bye. Bye.
Let's play some music.
Oh, yeah.
Oh no. Here. Hey, psst. Ga even snel naar emma-sleep.nl voor een bergkorting op heerlijk slaapspul.
Zoals het kussen van je dromen of het matras van je dromen.
Gebruik de code DAMNHONEY aan elkaar om nog eens 10% extra korting te krijgen bovenop de kortingen die je al op emma-sleep.nl vindt.